Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat personally to incredibly inspiring women. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Angela Middleton. Hello and welcome.
Hi, Nikki. Lovely to see you. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to meet you. Now, Angela is a founder of many award-winning businesses, a social entrepreneur, and a leader of the career training and apprenticeship industry. She was winner of the 2017 Business Brilliance CEO of the Year Award. Fabulous. Congratulations. And is an author of several books and an award-winning podcaster, and has even appeared on parliamentary committees. Wow, that is an incredible lineup. But can we please start with talking about one of your businesses, the career and fitness coaching company, Your Body Means Business. What's that all about then?
Well, that's the most recent initiative, actually, and it's sort of a culmination of all the other things that I've done over my career. I realised a couple of years ago, and it was sort of by accident. It's funny how, you know, for someone that's so keen on planning as I am, that sometimes things sort of still happen by accident. And when I interview people myself, I'm never found to be surprised by that. But basically what happened was a couple of years ago, was burning the candle at both ends, very, very busy, enjoying my work, enjoying my social life. But the one thing that I wasn't happy with was how my body was going. I'd always been sort of quite naturally fit. I'd done a lot of cardio and things like that. And I was quite lucky that I was relatively slim. But suddenly, that wasn't the case anymore. I started to feel that sort of spare tie around my tummy. I started to feel a bit tired. And I was sort of, nothing would work. You know, I'd run the marathon, this, that and the other. And then I saw, my son was living with me for a short period of time. And I saw that he started to be very, very focused on how much food he was eating. And he literally started to change body shape in front of my eyes over a period of weeks. It turned out he was doing weightlifting, weight training. And cut long story short, he introduced me to it. I took to it like a duck to water. And I ended up getting phenomenal results really, really quickly. And through, it wasn't just the physical exercise in the gym and lifting heavy things, but it was the way they taught me about nutrition as well. And I thought that I was, you know, a very sort of healthy eater, which I was, but there's a certain way of eating for your body, and then it bypasses all of the things that we think hold us back, such as hormones as women, and you end up getting a body that you never thought you could again. And once I achieved that, I realized the impact that it had on my mind, and all of that combined had an amazing effect on my business. So whilst I was going through this physical transformation, my business started to grow. And I realised, hang on a minute, you know, after all this time of spending hundreds of thousands on consultancy and finding out so much about business strategy from the likes of Goldman Sachs and UCL and all of this, that and the others you do over the years, I suddenly realised the missing piece was the body as well. And so I thought, right, I want to bring this together and provide a sort of a holistic type of coaching to people who are maybe doing well in business or doing well in their job, but still there's that missing ingredient. Maybe they're plateauing, maybe they're not going to where they want to get to. And I really know now that the missing parts are your body and your mind. Yeah. And if you can get those together as well, then you've got all three parts and then you can soar. And that's where it came from, a long way around explaining it.
Not at all. Thank you. Well, we can all learn from that because we all want to look like you and to be where you are in business. So that's brilliant to have inspiration. And as you say, it combines the mind, body and the structure to achieve business and body success for entrepreneurs. And you run masterclasses and coaching, don't you, to help people understand their needs and beliefs. What sort of snippets can you tell us?
We use those techniques for all age groups and in all types of courses, actually. So not just on that one, which is the online course. I mean, we also do things with young people, as you know, where they join us straight from school. They don't necessarily know what it is they want to do. They've had very limited careers advice. And the very first, and you know, they think they come to us as a sort of recruiter in order to learn how to interview and to put together a CV. And so they're pretty astonished when we sit them down and start to talk to them about their life vision and things like that. But what I've realised with all of us as human beings is that we've all got a certain number of basic needs beyond sort of security and food and water. And these are things to do with certainty, you know, love and connection, progress, contribution. And if you can get to the root of, you know, what really makes someone tick and they get this vision clear in their head as to what they want to achieve with their life, the next step then is their career. And we just find it so easy to once we've actually sat people down and said to them, okay, let's talk about your life and let's envision your future self. And we bring it to life by asking them a series of questions. So, you know, close your eyes, look at your future self. What are you wearing? Who are you with? What is your daily routine? Where do you live? Where do you work? You know, where do you go on holiday? What do you eat? What do you drink? You know, everything really. And we have fun with it as well. You know, you get sort of young guys coming in straight from school and they're saying things like, well, you know, I've got a tall blonde girlfriend and I'm driving an Audi TT and things like that. The important thing is that, you know, with anybody of any age, you get that vision clear for a few years hence, really bring it to life so you feel like you're living it, and then come back to where you are and go, okay, what are the missing steps now to get there? And these missing steps might be type of work experience, it might be physical fitness, it might be, you know, changing your career, it might be a qualification, whatever these steps are, everything when you break it down like that is achievable. And then we find it so much easier after that, because especially with young people, they are then much more engaged because they now see why, for example, we may be encouraging them to pass their maths qualification. Or let's say, you know, a mum returner to work, she's hugely unconfident, but we get her to envisage, you know, the life that she could be leading and how she could look and what she could be doing. And again, she sort of sees that as, you know, very hopeful and very inspirational, and then is prepared to sort of go through maybe the discomfort of interviews when she's not had interviews for a long time and things like that. So it all starts with a vision and trying to tick the boxes of these human needs, and then coming back to this current, you know, point. And this applies no matter who the people are and what the courses are.
Brilliant. So it's really not keeping work and life separate at all, is it? It's having your vision and then making it happen. Yeah. You've also been a judge on the lovely Richard Branson's Voom panel discussing small businesses and investment. I love that guy. Did you actually meet him?
I did. I actually had lunch in his kitchen. It's a funny story there, because after being, you know, judge on the panel, we were all invited to go to his house. And so you never know what to expect. And it was pouring with rain, I remember. And the driver took me there from the station and sort of dropped me off outside this huge marquee, because he assumed that we were going to go to this event that was in Richard's garden. And then the security guy came out to me and he said, oh no, you're actually due to be in his house. So he led me through Richard's back garden. So go through the back garden, knock on the back door, and Richard opens it. You know, he's cooking lunch himself. Hi, come in. You know, so it's really lovely. Met him, his daughter was there, and a few people that were, you know, shortlisted for the winner of that particular year, and myself and some of the other people on the panel, and had a really good chat with him. And, you know, yeah, it was nice to sort of see him in his kitchen. And it's just like a normal guy, really, quite quiet, quite shy, but just really happy to have you there.
Amazing. Was this in Necker Island?
Unfortunately not, no. It was pouring with rain, and it was, yeah, just outside London.
Did you advise him to invest in some good businesses? What were they, and did he go ahead with it?
Yeah, I mean, the Voom competition has been running for 3 years now, and I was absolutely astounded and delighted to be picked for it. What they did is they sort of went through LinkedIn, funnily enough, and they identified people. Well, first of all, it was announced on LinkedIn, and my PA said to me, Angela, I've just seen this. I think you should apply for it. And it was one Sunday afternoon, and I clicked a few buttons on LinkedIn, carried on watching TV or whatever it was I was doing, didn't think any more about it. And then that same PA, you know, a few weeks later, rang me. I was driving on the motorway and said, oh my goodness, you've been chosen for this panel. And it turns out there were six of us chosen from LinkedIn and our profiles and everything. And I was asked to judge on the basis of entrepreneurism. And so it was what they call it, a pitch-a-thon. So it's a 24-hour pitch-a-thon where you sat there and literally hundreds of small businesses came and they were allowed to give you a 6-minute pitch. And so you had to sit there and listen to a 6-minute pitch. You then could ask them questions for a couple of minutes, and then you scored them for a couple of minutes. That was 10 minutes, and on it went to the next one. And we did literally hundreds of them. And then after that, when we were all exhausted, basically decided on the shortlist. And this shortlist was six of the businesses. And then there was a big event in the BBC studios, I think they were, or I can't remember, maybe in the other side, ITV studios. And the six then pitched live to Richard. And the day before that, we had prepared them for how to sort of really maximise the impact of their pitch, and, you know, make sure they were sort of comfortable and got their main points across, because again, it was under time constraints. And I could see with Richard, you know, he loves things that have a great impact socially, you know, and on the planet and things like that. So we made sure that when we were selecting these six, they not only had real business potential, so they were good commercial propositions, but equally that they were going to be making a difference, that they were innovative, different, and you know, and would appeal to all of that side of his sort of requirements as well. I mean, as we all know, Richard is much more about sort of, you know, taking us all to the next level, saving the planet and doing good things, as he is for sort of making money. So, and I always remember once, because it wasn't the first time I met him, I met him another time in the green room behind the scenes for something. And the very first thing he said to me was, what problem does your business resolve? What social problem? And it was the first time I started to think of myself as a social entrepreneur as a result of that conversation. That was many years ago.
Well, he's just a guru, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
In June 2018, you launched your Limitless Manifesto in the House of Commons. What did that involve?
Well, that was as a result of realising that we had an end-to-end solution for everybody who wanted to sort of progress in their career. One of the things that I always say about myself is that I can see people's potential before they can. And it's so frustrating for me when I can see people could do such great things and they want to, but they just don't realise what they're capable of and they don't believe they can do it either. And I think this all stems from the fact that they get very limited careers advice, particularly in school. And we know this not only because of what the national press say, but also anecdotally when we talk to our own learners and we ask them, and they never get any decent careers advice. I don't blame schools for that, by the way. I think that teachers have got quite enough on their plate, and that's why I've just written a book for teachers. I'll come on to that in a minute, I'm sure. But so the reason for launching this manifesto was to make everybody, or as many people as we could in the government, aware of the fact that we believe that there was a real need in the country for free careers advice for every type of individual, even if they're employed, you know, because you get people mid-career who are employed and there's no one to help them if they want to go to the next level. Because they're employed and they're sort of, you know, paying tax and everything, job centres are not going to help them. Recruitment companies won't help them because the recruiters are very driven by what the employer wants. And so if you have someone in a job that, you know, they've got a mortgage and they've got family commitments and things like that, it's very, very hard for them to move forward. So I wanted to make something available from real life people that are doing the job, so high flyers really, and to make this accessible for free in a format that anybody could use whenever they wanted to. And so that was the reason for me doing, you know, the I Want to Be A podcast available on iTunes. But it was bigger than that, really. It was sort of saying that everybody in this country can do more. The government want this country to be a global leader, or to continue to be a global leader. That means that we have to be more productive as a country. We need to get our GDP up. We need more skills. We have all that latent potential available to do it. All they need is a bit of direction. They need aspirations. They need to know what the opportunities are, and they need to know what the stepping stones are. And so what I launched was this manifesto explaining how that could be done and talking about the end-to-end solution, ranging from books and podcasts so they can listen to get and read to get inspiration, then different types of careers clinics which we launched to be able to sort of help people plug the gaps, whether that's work experience or qualifications, and then obviously, you know, the traditional placement facility where, you know, you can actually place them into jobs, but then after that delivering more training and upskilling of more of a holistic nature, talking about your body means business, so helping people mentally, physically, as well as with their business as well, and with their career as well. And so I just wanted to sort of consolidate that all into one big end-to-end package and launch that in the House of Commons. That's what we did, and we were very lucky. It was the 4th of June. We had a beautiful terrace base room looking over the Thames to launch it. Hundreds of people came. We had, you know, lords and MPs and skills minister and everybody talking about it. And so really, as well, I like to be held accountable, and I knew that if I put it right out there, I'd have to sort of then move forward and sort of, you know, take the next steps, and that's what we've done.
Good for you, and you're helping, you know, young people and people returning, as you say. Yeah, that's fantastic. And as you say, you know, in our day, we tootle along, you know, to the careers advice, and they'd be quite helpful in what you wanted to do and what you could do. And as you say, and we're not entirely not blaming schools, but careers advice is difficult. Too many young people are leaving without being aware of their options. They don't take that vital first step. And also, you touched on, I've listened to some of your podcasts and on social, that some people have several careers, you know, 3, 4, 5. I've had, you know, 2 or 3 myself. That's still an option too, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. And it never fails to astound me when I actually interview people and find out what they were doing compared to where they are now. So, for example, lovely lady Julie Tankard, who's a CFO for a very, very large company, she started as a nurse. You know, I've got had a top lawyer in Mishkon Dureya in the city. He started off working in the hat department of Selfridges. I mean, it goes on and on. People have had amazing numbers of different careers. And what's really also very interesting is when you look at somebody in a career where they're doing really well and they really enjoy it, which normally the two go in hand, by the way, it's nearly always where they've managed to consolidate, one, what they like doing, and two, what they're good at from their past. And sometimes as you're interviewing them, they sort of join those dots right in front of your very eyes. You know, there's a professional singer that I interviewed, Joe Frid, who's, you know, fully booked out and huge demand. He was in the police force for 10 years and didn't sing at all. So, and yet he was a singer as a child. So, that's what's lovely about life, really, is that anything is possible. But it's just a question of thinking about it, really sort of taking that time to really think about what it is that you want, what you're good at. Everybody is good at something that no one else is. And it's just finding that thing, really, and then sort of turning that into your career if you can.
Definitely turning your passion, and that's what we're doing. What we're doing is turning your passion and joining the dots. And I've found that in my own life, you know, it is joining the dots. You think, oh, those skills, actually, gosh, that's why I did that, because that adds up to that. It's quite interesting.
And people find things easy. Some people find things easy that other people look at and find really difficult. So you doing this podcast now, second nature to you, but some people would find that incredibly difficult and daunting, whereas you love doing it and it's you know, it's easier for you. So I think it's just finding that innate skill, and everybody has it.
And I think it's definitely, as you say, you know, what you're good at or what you're passionate about. And I say, you know, to my own teens, what you're passionate about as a teenager, it often stays with you your whole life, doesn't it?
Completely. Yeah, it really does.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned your podcast. You have an award-winning podcast, Clever You, we'd love ours to be, called I Want to Be A, and your own blog and vlog. And in fact, we had some gentlemen here earlier who've going to put some of that on the internet. It's very exciting. You mentioned you thought there was a lack of careers advice in the UK, and the Careers Stepping Stone. So it's an A to Z of I Want to Be A.
Yeah, so it is, and it started off very much as an A to Z for school leavers. The idea being that, you know, I was envisaging teachers sort of saying, right, everybody, if you want to be an accountant, sit down today. We're going to put the 20-minute accountant vlog on or podcast on, and we'll all have a listen, and then, you know, we'll get some advice and then set you on your way. And that's really how it was intended to be used, first of all. I must admit, you know, I struggled a little bit to find a zoologist and an X-ray expert. I think that's what we're looking for X. But we're more or less done the A to Z, and it's moved on quite considerably since then, because I started to realise that this advice was not just for school leavers. It certainly was for people midway through their career as well, and people that wanted to change. And also that people didn't need to sort of stop one thing to start another. You can actually have several things running at the same time. And more people now, they call it the gig economy, don't they? Where, you know, some people might have a job, then they've got starting to run their own business on the side and things like that, and gradually make that transition. So it's become more than the A to Z for schools. The listeners, we've been monitoring the listeners. We're getting about 10,000 listens a week, which are absolutely over the moon about. We're really promoting it to schools. We're not monetizing it at all, because I think, you know, it's something that we really enjoy, and you know that you have an impact. And I'm sure, like you, I'm never short of guests who want to come on it. It's amazing how people like to give their free time, but also people like to talk about their history, because well, you know, they're proud of it, obviously, but it's therapeutic for people as well. What I often find when you're talking to people is that they forget about the chronological order of what they've done. And as they're telling you, they're sort of surprising themselves. Well, wow, well, that led to this and that led to that, you know. But yeah, it's designed for schools, but it's also if a young person comes home and, you know, wants to sort of share something with one of their parents, sit around the dinner table and sort of talk about a singing career or a law or accountancy. And what I've made sure is that at the end of each podcast, the individual talks about entry into the profession now. So even if they've been in that profession for quite a few years, I get them to sort of prepare their views on what the best next steps would be. The doctor was a great one, where he talked about, you know, if you decide that you want to be a doctor and you haven't done the right degree qualification. He talked about medical school, the different medical schools you can do. You can do foundation years, transition years. And so effectively, anybody can even be a doctor if they want to, no matter where they're starting. And so, yeah, there's some really sort of solid advice in each of them as well. And you never know who you're going to impact, but you know that you're making some impact. So it's great.
Well done you. And also clever that, you know, most teens and college and uni people are always on their phones. And, you know, a podcast is ideal for that. They can listen and find out more than just independently, can't they? Which is great. So you've written two books, How to Get Your First Job for Students Newly Out of School, College and Uni, and one for Returners to Work, Bridge the Gap. And you've just touched on that you're writing another one. My goodness. Any snippets?
Well, the first one, it sort of became a series by accident. I had every intention of just writing one book, which was all of the content of the course that we used to sort of, you know, place young people. I was aware that, you know, there's 800,000 young people not in employment, education and training in the country. We've got 5,000 towns and villages. The work that we do is very, very face-to-face labour intensive, although we have got the online programmes as well. But for young people, it's very labour intensive and face-to-face. We couldn't possibly get in front of all that 800,000. The skills minister came and saw what we did and said, why are you not doing it all around the country? And I said, well, I'd love to, but, you know, it's a bit of a logistical difficulty to do that. And I thought, right, I'm going to put it all in one book. So I had in my mind when I wrote that first book, you know, this young person who's come out of school, college, or university, and I spoke to them in the book and I told them, you know, exactly what my recommendations would be for them to be able to really propel themselves forward and get that first job. But it was while I was writing it that I realised that there are so many other stakeholders in the picture. You know, to really make it work, that young person needs the support of their teachers, their parents or their carers, the employers that they go to work for the very first time. And I realised that it's very beneficial as well for those stakeholders for this to work. You know, schools really want outcomes for their students. Parents, of course, do. But employers need new young entrants to join them. That's the new lifeblood of their business. They don't know what skills they're going to need in the future. And so I thought, right, I'm going to write a series of books, actually, with more or less similar messages, but written depending on who the audience is. Yeah. And once I've got that series done, so the third one now is going to be for employers, because we find a lot of employers, surprisingly, don't quite know how to handle new young entrants into their business, especially small businesses where, you know, the owner is the manager as well and is doing HR and IT and finance and marketing and everything else. Mm-hmm. To manage the career of a young person is quite challenging for them. So we'll get that series done. But then I really want to write a book for, and this is what I'm planning at the moment, for women, I'd call it midlife, although I think that, you know, we're all going to live to 157, according to Peter Diamandis' latest research. But, you know, I'd say sort of, you know, sort of 50s. There is no reason why 50-year-old women can't look like 25-year-old women and have that same amount of energy and go on to do two and three more careers. There's no reason why. I've seen it myself. I've proved it myself. And so, you know, I'm going to put that all into a book. And I can't wait to do it as well. I'm really excited about it.
That'll be the best seller. Definitely, because I think you're right. You know, there's so many people and empty nesters and everything else and children growing up and they want their identity back and they're saying, what can I do?
So much to add as well to the country and to employers and to the economy, really. Yeah. So there's all that future for everybody. And it saddens me sometimes, you know, when I see my own friends and they don't realise what the potential is for them. So, yeah, I'm excited about doing that.
I think a lot of mothers lose confidence, don't they? And it's really getting that back and actually realising your skills as a mother are bigger than any skill in any job that you could ever have.
I mean, once you have children, it is a sort of a shock to the system because you're doing so much. But it comes naturally, the multitasking and everything, doesn't it? But it is amazingly transferable, that set of skills, once you've got them. You know, my PA, when she left to have a baby, and I was sort of talking to her about all the time management and the negotiation and, you know, all of these different skills that you learn when you've got a young child. And I saw her the other day and she was telling me, you know, that, yeah, she can see that now, she's using it. So it's not, I always say to young women, or, you know, women who are about to have their first child, don't panic about it. Don't think, oh my goodness, you know, I'm going to lose my foot on the ladder and things like that. It, looking back, it's such a short period of time. Enjoy it. See it very much as maybe, you know, you're just sort of plateauing just for a bit. But in the big picture, it really doesn't matter. Because, okay, you may not progress as quickly as you want, let's say, up the corporate ladder whilst you're having your young children. And, you know, you are torn because, you know, you're putting so much emotional and physical energy into them as well, but you're acquiring all these other different skills that in the end you bring to bear with whatever you're doing in your career. And you know, my children are in their 20s now, and they need you emotionally, but they don't need you physically, they don't need your time so much, but you know, you've got all this experience from bringing them up, and then you apply that to business, and you're a lot more successful, and you're calmer, more confident, more philosophical. You know, you understand that things take longer than you think they will. And I think, yeah, with sort of age and maturity, that you get all of those good things. And if you can sort of have the physical and mental energy to propel you forward fast as well, then you've got it all.
So we've talked about Richard Branson obviously being the man that's inspired you. Which strong women have inspired you?
I'm a big fan of the female politicians. I think that, you know, running a business is really a bit bigger than running a household and a bit smaller than running a country. So if you look at the workload we have as running a business and then sort of multiply that numerous times, you know, you've got the job of a female politician probably, and especially the Prime Minister. And I don't really, you know, I'm not massively a political persuasion, but I have observed a lot of female members of Parliament, and obviously I've met the Prime Minister a few times as well. And I'm just overawed by the fact that, you know, they run families and they've often had businesses. They're in the public eye. They are very, you know, criticised one way or another, just as the guys are. But you know, they do tremendous jobs. And I think Theresa May at the moment, she has got a very, very difficult job to do. But she's sort of very stoic with it. She always looks the part. And as we know, us women, you know, have to wear makeup and get our hair done and all the rest. We have all those extra things that men don't have to worry about, do they? Nails, etc. And yet, you know, she carries on, and she doesn't look tired, really. You know, she sort of keeps all hours. So, yeah, for me, it's the female politicians. Before her, obviously, Margaret Thatcher, and, you know, the European female leaders as well, and the national female leaders. So those, for me, are the ones that, you know, I find really, really inspiring.
Did you see Michelle Obama's written her book and the sellout at the South Bank Centre? There was a queue of 40,000 people or more.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to reading that, actually. I haven't seen that yet. Have you read it yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, I can't wait. But I did, and I'm not surprised at all, because, you know, and we need female role models like this. There's not enough of them.
I mean, there must have been a lot of them, but what has been the proudest moment of your career or your life?
It's really difficult to say, isn't it? Because I think, you know, if you are sort of a driven high achiever, like most of us are in business, it's very hard to sort of sit there and pat yourself on the back. And I'm very mindful of that. You know, I'm one of these that if I'm not careful, I'm always looking forward to the next thing, and I'm never sort of taking time to, you know, contemplate what I have achieved. So I suppose if I look back, I have to sort of say, having a business, running it for 16 years, you know, I think that is a measure of not necessarily business skill, but just my, you know, ability to put up with a lot of challenges and rubbish that we do. I think sometimes, you know, the people that succeed in business, not necessarily the best ones, they're just the most resilient. So I'm pretty proud of my ability to be resilient. And I tend to be someone that when there is, if there's something I want to achieve, I can be very focused, and I feel pretty confident that I will achieve it in the end. So I'm proud of that. And I've always tried to help people whilst I've been in business as well. I've never knowingly sort of upset anybody or trod on anybody or anything like that. So I feel that I've got integrity with my business, and that's really important to me. So I suppose that's the things that I'm mostly proud of.
Definitely. And well done you. Can we talk about your passions, your hobbies, and how you relax and spend your time? I mean, you've literally taken that body training to bodybuilding, haven't you? Yeah. By the photos on the internet, are incredibly impressive. So, how do you do all of that?
Well, I mean, it's funny actually, because people think that I live my whole life in the gym, but I go to the gym 6 days a week, but only for an hour. I do four sessions. Four of those days I do weightlifting, and then 2 days I do running on a treadmill. And that's the two running days is quite new to me. I didn't do any cardio for a long time, and then I started to do the running again and found it really therapeutic and quite, you know, it boosts your endorphins and everything. So that's what I do. I do go 6 days a week, but only for an hour. And then on the Sunday, I do an hour of yoga. But outside of that, there's so much more. I'm one for routine. I like routine. I like not having to think about too much all the little things in my life. So, and I find it quite fun to have routines that get lots of things done with no extra time. It's almost like a little self-challenge. So I'll get up fairly early now, about 4:30. And but I really like it, you know, because I do all the things like put a face pack on and do a bit of meditation, and then do about an hour of sort of reviewing the day from yesterday and planning what I'm going to do that day. And then I do a bit of solid work, and then I go to the gym, and then I break my work day down into a series of slots. And then I like to be finished by about 7:30 and then relax, you know, with my daughter or whatever, and have dinner sort of 7:30 till 8:30, and all go to bed about 9:30 boringly. I've read something. I used to be a big social person, I must say. I've been to, you know, most of the restaurants and bars, and I used to be one of those that was up till midnight networking away and everything, but I sort of don't do that as much now. It's just not something that I particularly want to do. I love the theatre, I love ballet, I really love fashion. So if I'm not careful, I can shop too much, so I have to sort of keep that in check. I really like reading, particularly autobiographies and different concepts. I'm reading a great book at the moment called Atomic Habits by a bloke called James Clear. So I fill my time, and there never seems to be enough time. But I'm constantly reviewing my routine to say, right, can I get, you know, a bit more done, and can it be a little bit more streamlined? So I do lots, I guess, you know. And I also like doing all the girly things. So me and my daughter, every Saturday we go and get nails done and hair and all that sort of stuff. She's 25, and we have a lot of fun together.
Sounds amazing. I don't think you could organise or streamline your life any more effectively than, and my eyes literally bulge when you said get up at 4:30 in the morning. But you can fit in an awful lot, can't you, by the sound? And actually, you know, it works. You don't look tired. You feel tired. That's why you go to bed at 9:30.
Yeah, well, I think I never used to think, I never thought that I would get up at 4:30. And then I started trying it. I started getting up at 6 and then 5. 4:30, it's a slippery slope, I have to say. So I'm not going to be getting up any earlier than 4:30. I've decided that. Otherwise, it would be the middle of the night. But yeah, I think if you go to bed the night before, and I use a number of apps. So I use Sleep Cycle. I don't know if you've come across that app. So what that does is it monitors the quality of your sleep. And so when you wake up, it will tell you how long you've been asleep, but it will also monitor the degree of sleep you've had, whether you've had deep sleep or whether you've had troubled sleep. And there's a really good book called Why We Sleep, which sort of explains to you the importance of sleep and the fact that we have three deep sleep cycles. And if you get sufficient sleep, so I only sleep about sort of six and a half hours, but I feel really awake after that. So I think the quality of sleep that you get is just as important, if not more so, than the amount of sleep.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, how does it monitor your sleep? You're not all wired up. It can detect movement, can it?
Yeah, so it's called Sleep Cycle. I use a lot of apps, actually. I can tell you about those if you want, because I think apps are brilliant. You just download it. You put in it, you know, what time you want to get up, and you can have criteria. So you can say, I mean, I put things in there like, you know, whether I worked out, whether I had a stressful day or not, you know, whether I had the dogs on the bed, you know, all these sorts of things. And then you just leave it on the side, and I don't know, it just picks up. It records if you snore. but you just leave it on the side, and it just picks up movement, and it detects, therefore, how deeply you sleep. And over a period of months, it will work out a pattern, and it will tell you the sort of quality of sleep that you're getting compared to everybody else in the UK, how much sleep you have, what your average time is that you go to bed, what the average time is you get up, and you can start to work out what your body needs.
So you have to sleep on your own to do this, otherwise it picks up someone else's.
No, and if you sleep, you know, with somebody else, it actually won't pick them up. I don't know how it does it. It will only pick you up.
No.
So if you've got it on your bedside table, then it will only pick you up and nobody else.
And where are they sending this data? This is what we want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just hope it doesn't appear up on the internet, my snoring or something, in a few years' time.
Oh my goodness, everyone needs one of these. So do you have a mantra for living your life?
Well, I always, on my book, I have work hard and be kind. So that's a mantra that I always adhere to. I look at that every morning when I open the book. And, you know, besides that, I have a vision of how I want to be, and how I want to be is the same if a camera or an interviewer is with me or as I am when I'm at home. So I try to be very consistent to my vision of how I want to be. And I like, you know, the keep calm and carry on mantra as well. I think that is very relevant, particularly in business. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, you look well on it. So who's been the greatest influence in your life?
I really like Tony Robbins. I don't know how familiar you are with his workings, but I first went on one of his events in 2006, and it was almost by accident. I went on an NLP course, and that was quite early in 2005-06 NLP. But I found out about Tony Robbins as a result of that. And I remember going to this course called UPW, Unleash the Power Within, and wandering in there with a business suit on, and everyone's sort of standing on chairs and dancing. And have you been to any of them? And thought, oh my goodness, you know, what on earth have I let myself in for? But I found it so inspiring. And then since then, I've been on all of his courses, you know, all his different types of courses, I should say, all around the world. I joined his platinum group. I met him a few times. And, you know, he's a genuine person from what I've seen. And he just looks at things in such a wonderful way. He's so grateful for life. He teaches you to be very, very grateful for life and, you know, recognize the fact that there is so much abundance in our lives, really. And to recognize that, you know, to contribute and to progress really are the things that are the secrets to happiness. And so by learning that, it's made me very happy and productive and, you know, happy with what I've achieved. But it's also given me the tools to be able to share that with my friends, with my family, with my children, and of course, all the people that I work with as well. So of everybody outside of my immediate family, I would say Tony Robbins, and I'm a huge fan still of his work. Yeah,
he does an awful lot, doesn't he, to help and inspire people. Very talented. So lastly, what key message would you give to inspire and influence women? And we've got a lot of men who listen.
Well, I think, well, number one, you know, I've never really thought too much about the fact that I'm a woman and how it's going to stop me. I think, you know, we're just all people. And I know I'm not at all dismissing the gender inequality there is in pay, etc. It's a very real issue, but it is being addressed slowly, you know, too slowly. But notwithstanding that, I just think that it is much more important to sort of think of yourself as a person, realize that you have so much to give, and just continually think about the big picture. It's so easy to get bogged down into the, you know, the detail, before you know it, be thinking in a negative way about a little tiny problem, which really detracts us from achieving the much bigger picture of happiness. And so I would always say, take time out of your day, particularly in the morning, maybe through something like meditation with Headspace, but otherwise just sort of quietly thinking and remembering, what is the big picture of your life? Who do you care about? What do you care about? And make sure that, you know, your day is planned to sort of address those things on the whole. I think, you know, therein lies the path to happiness. I think that very, you know, we can all look back and look at what we were really worried about 2 weeks ago and think, what on earth was I doing? Why did I allow that to sort of spoil my day or make me cross with somebody? It's not easy what I'm saying at all. But if you can just try to master that and remember the big picture, I think, number one, you can achieve so much more. But number two, you'll be calmer and happier.
Thank you so much, Angela, for your time, your inspiration, and to help us and others out there starting a career or business and setting goals for their work, for their health and their bodies. It was great to meet you. This Influential Women's Podcast is presented by Nikki Bannerman and co-produced with Juliet Nichols. Please keep listening for more podcast guests on our channel and subscribe for free to your phone or inbox on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Comcast, Pocket Cast and Spotify. Thank you very much.